It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome and welcome back. I'm Steve Rosenblum. I suck so you don't have to. Two more hours here of Saturday's Suckage. In the 1 o'clock hour, Casey Johnson of NBC Sports Chicago. Talk Bulls with us, a bipolar Bulls. Doug Collins, if you hadn't heard, former Bulls coach, former Score basketball expert, has been named to the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. We're trying to reach Doug. We certainly will talk to KC about that. And later in the 1 o'clock hour, Danny Parkins, co-host of Parkins and Spiegel, right here on The Score. He did a thing. Danny did a thing. Danny wrote a book, co-wrote a book, co-authored a book. And we'll talk to him about that. It's a book called Pipeline to the Pros, How D3, Small College Nobodies, Rose to Rule the NBA. But for now, we're going to go to the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. We're going to welcome back to the show Chris Showpony Childers. He's host of Full Ride with Rick Neuheisel on SiriusXM's College Sports Radio. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Mr. Rosenblum. How are you, dude? It's good to be here.
I'm groovy. I woke up today and I chose groovy. I think we can all make that choice.
Yeah. So, I chose tired when I woke up today, but I'm glad you chose groovy.
I think tired chose you, Chris. That would be my guess. So I want to talk. I know you're down there in what we'll call Jim Valvano country for this current NCAA weekend. And I love the Cinderella of the Cinderella story, the daughter of Cinderella or sons of Cinderella. Here they are again. Here comes the Wolfpack, and they've got the adorable, huggy DJ Burns. For me, that's the best story. And I guess because I don't have a real reason to care about any particular team, nor do I particularly care about the sport where you would embrace it and say, this team plays honest basketball. I love DJ Burns, and I love the story. I love the Wolfpack. I love the whole idea. How is that playing out down there?
It's huge. I mean, you and I both. I think everybody loves DJ Burns. Here's the thing, man. Like, they are March Madness personified. They are the epitomization of getting hot at the right time and changing all your fortunes and all your luck. I mean, the flat-out honest storyline that we were talking about on March 1st was they're going to have a coaching change. They're going to have a search. This team is average. They're not competitive. DJ Burns was, I would say, underachieving during the regular season. They just weren't very good. DJ Horn was an average player, and for whatever reason, they get to the tournament in Washington, they get to the ACC, and they caught lightning. And, you know, think about that game against Virginia they played in the semifinals. They're down three. There's an 80% free throw shooter at the line that misses the back end. I think it was a 1-1, and he misses the shot. Gives NC State possession. They go down, hit a three, force overtime, win the game, go to the championship, beat Carolina, I think, in the process. And here they are. They're four games into the NCAA tournament, and they're still kicking. They still have a chance to win the national title. If you go back, so I did this the other day. I went on the North Carolina State message boards. Not that I like to look at what idiots say on message boards, but I thought it would be a fun exercise just to go and see what the Wolfpack fans were saying back on March 1st. And on March 1st, they played Pittsburgh, and they got beat again. And the collective thought, there was not one positive comment about Kevin Keats or wanting to keep him. Everybody was saying, hopefully this is the last game he coaches. There was Wolfpack fans saying, I hope we opt out of the ACC tournament and just end this and start over. And yet, 3 weeks later, they're in a position to win the national title. It's crazy. Burns is, not only is he cuddly and lovable, and he's all those, and he's super intelligent. I mean, he's one of those kids that can play the piano and play all kinds of instruments. And I mean, he's one of those, you know, creative types. And on top of it, you look at the kid, he's just got unbelievable touch around the basket. I mean, this is the kind of guy that seemingly everything he throws off the glass finds a way into the basket. Now, I'm really eager to see what happens tonight against Zach Edey, because I think he's got a big enough, I mean, he's built like a SUV. I think the kid's body and his style of play is big enough, if push came to shove, to potentially draw Zach Edey into foul trouble. If Purdue gets into foul trouble, they're in harm's way, because they make their living with the kid that's 7'4" getting all the attention, and then guys are wide open on the wing. All of a sudden, if you can close out on the wing and not have to worry about a dude who's 7'4", you got a shot to win. You got a shot to get to Monday night. That's what I think has to happen. I think they've got to do something to kind of turn the tables on Zach Edey and put him into some sort of a foul trouble situation like he does to everybody else. But I think Burns might be in a unique situation to actually get that done. But you're right. It's an incredible story. And I think everybody who doesn't have a dog in the hunt is going to be, you know, no pun intended, is going to be cheering for the Wolfpack tonight.
Chris Childers, show pony to those who know him best, is my guest here on The Score. He's on SiriusXM's College Sports Radio. Full Ride with Rick Neuheisel is the show. We're talking about the NCAA men's tournament and the idea of the Wolfpack getting Zach Edey in trouble. Do they have enough? I don't know if they have a Jack Haley, a guy who was brought in specifically because he had 6 fouls on him, and somebody had to commit the flagrant foul. I don't know if they would rough it up and ugly it up, and if they're capable of that. Sometimes basketball coaches want to honor the spirit of the game. But that's kind of what you're saying. See how much you can get away with and see how it affects Zach Edey. Would that be the first order of business for the Wolfpack tonight against Purdue?
Yeah, I think so, because he's such a problem. I mean, you've watched this tournament. You've seen, doesn't matter what building he plays in, whether it's, you know, in West Lafayette, Indiana, whether it's in Detroit, Michigan last weekend, whether it's in Phoenix tonight, the guy's 7'4", no matter where he goes. And he's a skilled 7'4". He's a 7'4" that, it's crazy, because I know I have good friends of mine that are basketball coaches that went and watched Zach Edey play in high school at IMG Academy and just passed. Didn't want to recruit him. Didn't, because he was just so clunky. I mean, he was tall, but he didn't have any kind of ability to him. And he got out of, you know, he got winded really easily. And what Matt Painter has done to develop this guy into an all-around player, I think, is exceptional. If he's out there, he's a problem. The only person I think can give him a game is Klingon for UConn. And that might be exactly what we're, you know, what we're fast forwarding to on Monday night. But I think Burns' body is unique enough where he can bang around and potentially get Zach Edey in some kind of trouble. But like, that to me is the key to beating Purdue. And really, for that matter, you know, UConn, if you can get those guys somehow in a position where they're not effective, where they don't have the chance to impact the game in a significant way, that to me is the only way you have a chance to beat them. Those two big guys are really unique. Their skill sets are special in 7'2" and 7'4", 7'2" and 7'4". And for the average basketball team, it's just going to be a real problem trying to match up with it. So for me, the quicker you can get Edey, and it doesn't happen. That's the thing I'm trying to say. Like, nobody, he usually gets everybody else in foul trouble. But I think Burns is physically unique enough where potentially he could kind of flip the script. And if he does, then Purdue could be vulnerable. So, yes, that's what I would be trying to do if I'm Kevin Keith.
While you're giving your thoughts on that and the idea of the way to approach Zach Edey, Klingon just blocked 5 more Illinois shots. So I don't know how UConn doesn't show up Monday, whether it's a foregone conclusion they're going to win, but I don't know how they don't show up. How they just have to shoot worse? Is that it? Alabama shoots lights out and UConn
losing. Yeah, I don't see it happening either today or on Monday for that matter. I think they're just that much better than everybody else. You saw it as somebody who lives in the state of Illinois. I mean, Illinois is a potent offensive team. They went on a 30-0 run against yes. Illinois. That gives you an idea of how potent these guys are. And it's way more than Klingon. I mean, they've got balance. They've got depth. They've got defense. That's the thing about them, is that they can kind of kill you in a variety of different ways, which is why I think they're probably 10-15 points better than everybody. I think they're going to smoke Alabama. No offense to me as a Bama student. I'm a grad student there. No offense to Lawrence Holmes. He's the one who talked me into going to that program. He went to the same program at Alabama. So no offense to us, but I think we're going to get our teeth kicked in today. And that's okay. I mean, Bama getting to the Final Four was a great thing, but I just think UConn is so far and above better than everybody else. It will be fun if we get to the point where we get Klingon taking on a big guy like Zach Edey in the NCAA tournament on Monday in the championship. But I think it's a foregone conclusion that we see UConn in that position.
Chris Joponi Childers is my guest. He's host of Full Ride with Rick Neuheisel on SiriusXM's College Sports Radio. Let's talk about that part of your life. And let's talk about the quarterback Ryan Poles did not see in person. He did not want to go see Drake May's pro day workout. He saw Caleb Williams. He saw Jaden Daniels. He saw, I believe, J.J. McCarthy's as well. But not Drake May. Why? What do you make of it? What have you guys talked about on the show regarding that?
Well, he's not wasting his time. He's gone all in. He's gone all in on Caleb Williams. He's identified him as the future of the Bears franchise. That was very, very apparent when Justin Fields got traded for a 6th-round pick, which still pisses me off, but I'm sure you've had plenty to say on that. So we can, you know, maybe another day. But he obviously, you know, he's gone all in on this kid. So there's no backup plan. There's no B. It's Caleb Williams is the future. Caleb Williams is uniquely athletic. If I'm being honest with you, I don't think Caleb Williams is going to be a star. I don't know if we have a star in this draft. I think Jaden Daniels would probably be the one that I would lean closest to just because I know what kind of winner that he is. I know there's been a lot said about his elbow and the weirdness and all that kind of stuff. But Caleb, from a just, you know, freakish, intangible perspective, checks every box. But Drake May does too. I mean, as far as a prototypical NFL quarterback that you're scouting, he's tall. He's got a big arm. He looks good in the pocket. He reads defense as well. His coach, Mack Brown, who's been doing this for a million years, waxes eloquent about the guy and his ability to translate to the NFL. I don't doubt it. I'm not a Drake May detractor at all. I think the guy can be an effective NFL quarterback. I get it, Bears fans being a little hesitant to take a North Carolina guy because of Mitch Trubisky, but I think what Ryan Poles has done is just eliminate all of that. He's eliminated any of the gas. He's like, go ahead and buy your jersey now if you're a Bears fan and get your Caleb Williams jersey because it's a foregone conclusion. But again, I don't think Caleb is the best quarterback in this draft. I think Drake May has a chance to be pretty good. I don't know if he's great either. This is a good quarterback draft per se, but I think there's a lot of guesswork here. Not that you don't always have that with a quarterback draft, but sometimes, like, Joe Burrow was a kid that I just knew. Like, there's no way he's not an exceptional talent in the NFL. There's some guys you just know, and I'm not sure I'm 100% sold on any of these guys. And with Caleb Williams, I don't know what I can say on your show, but on satellite, I can say the B word, but it rhymes with itch. I just think he's a little bit of an itch, if you will. I don't necessarily think it's going to translate well when the score is talking about him and, you know, all the different TV channels in Chicago that I grew up watching are talking about him. And maybe things aren't going well. I don't know how he's going to handle adversity. I just don't. I don't know. And quite frankly, don't feel that confident by, you know, hearing from his dad and hearing some things about this kid. He's a freakish athlete, which is why Ryan Poles has fallen completely head over heels and is going to, you know, risk his future on him. But as somebody who does this every single day for a living, you'd be shocked how many times I said this GM is an idiot and it's going to get him in trouble. And it does. And then you'd be shocked how many times I say, you better draft this guy and the guy ends up being a Pro Bowler. Not that I'm some savant, but I do it every day. And I would think that general managers would know more than me. Yet somehow Ryan Poles is in a position where he can run a major franchise, and I think he's a complete idiot. Like, he's Saturday suckage in a nutshell, if you ask me, sir.
Why?
Because of Justin Fields. It pisses me off. I thought, to me, with Fields, if you're going to think about what we gave up to get Justin Fields.
Yeah, but it wasn't him. It was the other Ryan. If you would, if Ryan Poles could trade with Ryan Pace, the Bears would own all 20 picks, the first 20 picks in the NFL draft. That's how big an idiot Ryan Pace is. But he can't do that. Why do you think Ryan Poles is an idiot?
For that trade, for what you got for Justin Fields. And I know that Ryan Pace was the one who initially made the move, but it's still your franchise. Think about what you gave up for that. And I think what you're doing, see, here's what I think you've done. You've traded away a quarterback for a sixth-round pick to get a quarterback that's not as good as the one you traded away. That's how I feel. So that's why I'm pissed, if that makes any sense to you.
Well,
you might disagree.
I do. I look at Justin Fields. This is almost, if nothing else, the bottom line, it's the devil I don't know. What I know about Justin Fields is this. He's not accurate. He can't throw in time, on time. I don't know. I am not convinced he can read his progressions. I'm not convinced Caleb Williams can either. But
yeah.
I do think he's got more of a I already know the guy's not accurate. And Justin Fields is a ball security nightmare. You look at combined fumbles and interceptions. I don't want him. He hasn't gotten better at that. He hasn't gotten better at ball security. Josh Allen's also bad at that, but Josh Allen has accomplished some things that Justin Fields hasn't. And that's why I actually lobbied for Justin Fields sticking around this year, this season,
okay,
and doing the whole Patrick Mahomes thing where Tyson Bagent's number two, Justin Fields is QB1. And Caleb Williams doesn't see the field until game 17 or something like that. That's fine by me because that works out with a guy able to get himself acclimated and learn something, and maybe you raise the trade value of Justin Fields. That's what I lobbied for. I lost on that.
I hope you're right. You know, I mean, and that would have been fine. I mean, that would have been perfectly fine with me to have Fields stick around. And, you know, if you want to bring in Caleb for competition and, you know, maybe Fields would have been so good you couldn't do anything with him. I mean, that would have been fine with me. I just disagree on what he can be. And I understand that he hasn't been the greatest thing in the world for Chicago. But I think if you put him in a position where you put in, again, the Bears have been accumulating some talent around him. And you have to put him in a position where the offense is conducive to his skill set. And the Bears never did that. Now, it doesn't matter anymore. Because he's gone. He's going to Pittsburgh. He's, you know, and I have a feeling he's going to be great for Pittsburgh. But to me, like when they drafted Fields, I was like, okay, now get the coach to match. And the second that the Bears made the switch they did with offensive coordinator, it was pretty obvious that they weren't going to keep Fields. But that bothered me. That was the thing that I got really angry at with Poles was, no, stop this. Keep your guy, get a coach that knows how to utilize this guy and watch him be a Pro Bowler. I mean, that I guess maybe I'm Justin Fields' biggest fan. Maybe I'm the ass kiss the luck for the kid. But I think he's a Pro Bowl talent. I really do. And I think the Bears never gave him – I think the greatest thing that ever happened to Justin was to go to Pittsburgh. But for the Bears, from that perspective, it just – it bothers me a little bit that they never really, from a schematic standpoint, and again, you can go back to Pace, but they never gave this kid a chance to be successful, in my opinion.
All right, man. That's a good place to stand. Good place to end this. We'll get back to this discussion at some point in the next couple months. Chris, always enjoy our discussions. Thanks for joining me today.
I love being on The Score, man. I tell everybody, it is the reason I do what I do. I grew up listening to the channel. Religiously, Dan Bernstein's still my hero. So anytime, Mr. Rosenblum, I love coming on The Score.
Wow, that's pretty low company to be part of. But thank
well,
you
very much. Terry Bores was my other favorite guy, but he's retired.
Now you're thinking about the best. There you go.
There you go.
Thanks,
love
Chris.
Boys.
Thanks, Chris.
See you, man.
All right. Chris Childers is just that's outstanding. Yep. Terry was everybody's hero. I wanted to be Terry Bores. Chris Showpony Childers, host of Full Ride with Rick Neuheisel on SiriusXM's College Sports Radio. And as you can tell, the scorehead. Take a break when we come back, and hopefully I will give you the, I'll eviscerate Kevin Warren. Something I've been wanting to do. There's more news today on that front. So I will bring it to you. We'll see what happens. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
It is. I'm Stevie Suckage here on Saturday Suckage. Wow, they welcome you back, Robbie. Robbie Triano's back as producer. What sucks? Having Childers on? Because the texters do not like Chris Childers.
Yeah, no. I know Chris from way back, but man, the people of Chicago are kind of fired up.
Yeah. As somebody said, well, anybody can get into that Alabama graduate program. There you go, Barnes. Okay. I'm going to read you some Kevin Warren quotes. They were in the Tribune recently. So I want you to listen to these quotes, and you're going to think, hey, this is exactly what I would say if I was trying to bluff my way into the hypocrisy of saying the Bears want to pay their fair share of taxes, but they want a cap on it so they don't necessarily pay their fair share of taxes. That's Kevin Warren's game. He's in charge of playing NFL Legos, and I'm not sure he has a clue how to do it in this city. So here's Warren to Colleen Kane of the Tribune. That Soldier Field is an ideal location for a new stadium. It's not really ideal for an old stadium, but there's Kevin Warren telling you it's ideal for a new stadium. Yeah, I'd say that if I was trying to bluff. Look at me. I'm talking to NFL big shots like Jerry Jones and Bob Kraft and Chief Sock Puppet Roger Goodell. Back to what Colleen Kane wrote in the Trib. Details on the cost and funding are still short. Of course they are. But Warren touted the improved public amenities, infrastructure upgrades, and economic impact that would come with the new construction. The plan of everyone, if everything comes together, he said, is, quote, put a shovel in the ground on the lakefront. Yeah, that's what I'd say, too, if I were bluffing. I'm going to dig, people, I swear. I'm going to watch me dig. More Kevin Warren here. Quote, we did put serious energy, many, many meetings, many conversations, many discussions, many negotiations to get an Arlington Heights stadium tax issue resolved. But also during that time period, my focus was to make sure to evaluate what is the best location in the state for the Chicago Bears' future home, and I started to study different areas and different sites, and it became very, very clear that downtown Chicago, especially along the lakefront, was the ideal location. Yeah. I'd say that, too, if I were bluffing. If I were trying to make Arlington Heights and nearby school districts cave, ideal. Chicago was ideal. Arlington Heights, not ideal. Did you hear me? Pay no attention to those 326 acres of raised land behind the curtain. This is Kevin Warren. More Kevin Warren. Quote, we in Chicago and the Chicagoland area and in the state of Illinois. I mean, he sounds right. Adopt the political stuff. We need to decide who we want to be. Kevin, I think we already figured that out. We don't want to be giving welfare, corporate welfare to billionaires. Continuing the quote. Are we a preeminent, thoughtful, creative, visionary city who can do business together with each other? We've done business. You're allowed to invest in your business. You want to build? You build. Right here in the state of Illinois. You're building your money. That's how we do it here. Continuing the quote. Visionary city who can do business together with each other, who can be progressive in our construction efforts, who can host the Final Four. Who can host the Super Bowl? Who can host certain concerts and mega events? I think our stadium provides the city of Chicago with the opportunity to decide who we want to be and if we want to be that world-class city that I know we are. This is an opportunity for us to come together and be able to do that. I'm sorry. When was Chicago not a world-class city? Really? Kevin Warren doesn't think Chicago is a world-class city. Kevin Warren thinks Chicago is second class, third class, what? That's what he's saying. We're not a world-class city unless we give him and his team money. That's when we become a world-class city. No, that's when you become world-class idiots. We've been world-class idiots before that way. The Bears have gotten money. Bears have gotten a stadium. The Bears have gotten the dumbest, smallest, ugliest stadium there is. That's. But now Kevin Warren is, you're not world-class. Not till I came here and started doing business. That's me, Kevin Warren. What he's saying is what I would say, too, if I were bluffing. I would prey upon the dumb emotionality of suckers to distract them from the money, separating suckers from their money, a long-time game. Public cash that ought to be directed at education, which the Bears obviously don't want directed to, because better-educated people will give them no chance to fill their billion-dollar tin cups at the end of the Roosevelt Road off-ramp. That's Kevin Warren. He's trying to bluff you here. Oh, and by the way, all the things he wanted would still be called Chicago and could be hosted at Arlington Heights. Detroit hosted a Super Bowl. It was not in Detroit, but it was called Detroit Super Bowl. And nobody wants to go to Detroit in January and February anymore than they want to come to Chicago in January and February. It was a stupid Super Bowl.
Hey.
Yeah, hey, yeah, Detroit kid.
You're probably right.
Kevin Warren's playing upon the Mondo Stupid. I would do that, too. That's exactly the way I would play it. More Kevin Warren quotes for you, because you just can't get enough of this guy talking. I'm not sure which end of his body this air is coming out of, but he keeps talking. Quote, I'm a very pragmatic and practical individual. And if we have difficulty trying to negotiate what the tax amount is, knowing how difficult the entire project is, I had to take a step back and say, single quotes, talking to myself, if we can't even figure out what the taxes are, we're going to have a very difficult time coming together and working on a memorandum of understanding or pilot legislation or any kind of legislation to make this work, and then the construction. And so, Kevin Warren continues, I thought it was important for us to still be respectful of each other, take a little break from each other, and for us to make it very clear that we're focused on Chicago now. Yes, that's what I would say if I were bluffing. Yeah, I don't like you. I have a new bestie. Neener, neener, neener. Continuing the quote, but again, I have great respect for the leaders of Arlington Heights. We still are, I believe, the largest landowner in Arlington Heights. And I'll continually remain in communication with them, but our focus now is Chicago. Yep, that's what I'd say too. If I were full of it, like Kevin Warren is, this is the chalk stripe suit version of neener, neener, neener. I have a new bestie. It's not you. Neener, neener, neener. But wait, there's more. There's more Kevin Warren quotes. Now how much would you pay? I really believe that this is the year that we have to pull together and collectively across the state and across the city and the county and do everything we possibly can in a manner that makes sense. Not being reckless, but in a manner that makes sense to pull together. That's code. Yes, people, that's code for nobody gets hurt if we do it our way. Reckless is giving billionaires public money for a private business. A way that makes sense, as Warren says, does not involve depriving school districts of much-needed funds to be sugar mommies to a multi-billion-dollar football team. But here's the thing. If Warren has $2 billion to dump into the lakefront project that the Bears won't own, $2 billion in private investment, he says, then why can't Warren pay whatever the property taxes are and whatever they might rise to because the Bears might have driven up the cost? $2 billion on a project you won't own? $2 billion you won't pay your fair share of taxes? And you say you want four decades of cost certainty? So does everybody who owns a home in Arlington Heights and Rolling Meadows and Palatine. They don't get cost certainty. They pay their property taxes, as ordered and as assessed. Why are you different? Seems there's a massive hole in Kevin Warren's story, the story he wants you to believe. And then here's some more stuff through that hole in Kevin Warren's story. And this comes from Fran Spielman of the Sun-Times today. Jin Kilgore, acting executive director of Friends of the Parks, is not about to go along with what she called Warren's, quote, "buy now, this deal won't last" sales pitch. The Bears met with Friends of the Park on March 21st and gave leaders of the group a glimpse of the team's vision for a lakefront stadium. I'm just going to insert my thought here. A glimpse is all the Bears have. There's nothing hard and fast about cost, funding gaps, construction, anything like that. Here, we have pretty pictures. Bedazzled by pretty shiny things. Continuing quotes from Jin Kilgore of Friends of the Parks. "We need to slow down. We need a lot of scrutiny because this isn't just about the lakefront. It's about public financing. It's about community development. The Bears were going to leave us 3 years, and now they want to come back?" Yep, seems like another hole in Warren's story. In my country, we call that playing both sides against the other. Here's more from Kilgore of Friends of the Park. Quote, "When I think about how long it takes to build a park or a school, it just boggles the mind. That just because you're a billionaire or a power broker, that all of a sudden you can snap your fingers and say, this is the timeline. That the norms and the rules don't quite apply to us as they do with other people. That's the part that has just really honestly stunned me. It seems like we have to, quote, buy now or you'll lose this deal forever." That's what the Friends of the Park said. That's what the Jin Kilgore, Friends of the Park, and today's Sun-Times said in describing the approach, the pitch, the manner that the titular president of the Bears gave the Friends of the Parks. So now Kevin Warren is a car salesman. He's gone from, I gave him credit as a poker player. Now he's a car salesman. This deal won't be here forever. Better buy now. Low mileage when it comes to quarterbacks, and this baby was driven only by an old lady. That's what Kevin Warren's doing. He's not even trying to bluff anymore. He's just trying to strong-arm people. He's trying to act like a used car salesman. Even after limited detail, the kind of limited detail the Bears provided to the Friends of the Parks during their first and only meeting, Kilgore said it's tough to imagine a dome stadium, a hotel, restaurants, bars, and sports museum passing legal muster with laws that prohibit new construction east of DuSable Lakeshore Drive. That's from the Sun-Times today, Fran Spielman's piece. Open quotes. "We do not want this on the lakefront." That's Jin Kilgore, Friends of the Parks. Continuing the quote, "We do not think it's a good idea, but we don't know exactly what they're proposing. We're not going to be pressured to accept or not accept a plan that isn't even concrete." Kevin Warren, strong arm, car salesman, incomplete. Warren has said he's eager to get moving on the stadium project. He has warned that construction costs could escalate by as much as $200 million for every year that the team waits. And now the strong arm tactics have turned into doomsaying. Ah, poker player, car salesman, strong arm dictator, doomsayer, the many faces of Kevin Warren. I think he has one move left: to threaten to hold his breath until he turns navy blue and orange. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Saturday Suckage. Coming up next, a scouting report on Caleb Williams you probably don't want to hear. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
going to do Cultural Zeitgeist or in WB Club. We're so packed today, but that's going to be... Pass that along to Tyler, Robbie. That'll be the 17th greatest riff in rock history. So we're going to do that. Whatever. What do you call that, Robbie? What do you call that thing?
The what?
Yeah, that yep. riff.
Oh, yeah, riff, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The strummy thing.
Robbie, listen up. Here's why. Draft coverage on The Score is presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Here's a scouting report on Caleb Williams you do not want to hear, but you're listening, so you're going to hear it anyways. Comes from Bruce Feldman of The Athletic in his mock draft. He explains what he did here. My aim with this project is to provide unique insight directly from the rival coaches who have scouted, game planned for, and then faced each of these prospects. Those sources, granted anonymity to speak freely about the prospects, know exactly what they're dealing with and what they've tried to do to them in real-life situations, real-game situations. So here's a rundown on Caleb Williams. Talent is tantalizing. He threw 72 touchdowns the past 2 years and has a jaw-dropping highlights packages of one remarkable throw after another. On third downs, the past 2 seasons, his touchdown-to-interception ratio was 16-0. His TD-to-interception ratio in the red zone during that span, 46-1. He lost 5 of his final 6 college games. Open parentheses. In fairness, the USC O-line was much worse last year, and the team's defensive issues hung over the entire program, period, close parentheses. It felt like Williams thought he had to be Superman every time out to rescue the team. Did he pick up some bad habits because of that? The feedback I got was mixed. No doubt there is some stuff about Williams that seems to rub folks the wrong way. But as I heard at the NFL Combine from staffers, it wasn't the kind of stuff they saw as alarming or even troubling. So he breaks this down, Bruce Feldman does in The Athletic in his mock draft. He breaks it down into different segments. The coaching intel is a key one. Quote, the kid is a magician. He just pulls stuff out of his ass. That program was in disarray. Without Caleb, I think they easily go 4-8 easy. I think he is phenomenal. He's extremely accurate off of his back foot and on the run. He needs to keep working on throwing on time and getting on rhythm. Didn't we just hear that here in with a quarterback in this city? It sounds just like Justin Fields. Bruce Feldman quoting another source, he has to improve how fast he gets the ball out. 2 years ago, I think the stat was that he held onto the ball the second longest of FBS quarterbacks. In the NFL, you can't afford to do that. Oi. He sounds just like Justin Fields. Oi. This comes from another coach. I'm not sure who it is, but I think I've narrowed it down. Quote, we tried to force his hand. The second time we played him, we still brought pressure, but we did it from different looks. We wanted to test how good his post-snap movement was, and he wasn't as good as some. I think he's an elite athlete in terms of making plays with his feet and staying active on the run like Mahomes. I don't think he has the arm like Mahomes. If you're talking about elite arm talent in this class, that would be Michael Penix. Penix. How is it? Did I just pronounce it? I turned it into a dirty word? Penix?
It's Penix.
But I can't help seeing that and not saying it that way. Sorry, Michael.
Big Penix energy.
Please don't draft him, Bears. If you're talking about elite arm talent in this class, that would be talking about Michael Penix. If Caleb can get better at getting rid of the ball quicker, at standing in the pocket and getting it out and getting better at diagnosing post-snap movement, I think that'll be a really good pick. Are you kidding me? These are what rival coaches, one of whom you just heard from, faced him at least two times, said. Let me repeat to you that last part. If Caleb can get better at getting rid of the ball quicker, at standing in the pocket and getting it out and getting better at diagnosing post-snap movement, I think that'll be a really good pick. And if my grandma had onions, she'd be my grandpa. Right? Isn't that what we're saying here? This is a scouting report that rips open every scar the Bears have had with quarterbacks the last, what, 40 years? Maybe 80 years? Quarterbacks who can't play quarterback in the NFL, all your hopes and dreams. This scouting report of the guy the Bears appear to be taking with the first overall pick is just like the scouting report in the NFL of the guy they traded for a sixth-round pick to Pittsburgh. I told you, Bears fans, you did not want to hear that, but I made you listen to it because that'll make you stronger. That'll steel your hearts against the heartbreak that'll come.
Just play that in the interview with Chris Childers and you'll be unbeatable.
Yeah, because everybody's going to hate us. This is the hour of hate. The only thing we didn't do is mention the White Sox and Mike Clevenger and what frauds and how despicable they are. So now that we're dirty from the White Sox and we brought up the idea that Caleb Williams' college scouting report sounds like Justin Fields' pro report and Chris Childers backs it up, we've pretty well gone down to the suckage sewer. To get us out of that, we're going to talk to Casey Johnson of NBC Sports Chicago, of the Bipolar Bulls. You hear them on this very radio station. You heard them here last night beat the Knicks. And maybe you heard the good news. Former Bulls coach, former SCORE basketball expert Doug Collins has been named to the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Talk to Casey about that and more. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
And I apologize. What is your name? I don't know who you are, the host.